Hello, everyone. It's that time again. It's time to talk some shift. My name's Mickey D'Angelo from Ango, who happens to host this thing. Super excited to have you. Today, we're going to dig into the topic of governance structures, and I'm joined by the phenomenal Josh Ambrose. Josh, how you doing, man?
Great. Just got back from my bachelor party. It's kind of like a bachelor party, but it's before you become a dad. It was the last trip with the boys. We went backpacking in Olympic National Park and went to a music festival in Washington. I'm very exhausted, still trying to get my sleep schedule back on track.
Wait a minute. I know that not only did you go to a music festival, but you hitchhiked to said music festival.
Yeah, in typical music festival fashion, right? You gotta pay homage to like the Woodstock era. It was great. Yeah, we had a good time. We were in the desert and the weather was beautiful at the Gorge Amphitheater. Beautiful spot, looking over nature with the music. Couldn't have asked for a better time. I'm just thoroughly exhausted.
I was wondering if we were going to be able to record this episode because Josh got kidnapped or was murdered. But no, obviously the modern day hippies are all cool and give each other rides everywhere.
Lots of friends stopped at a bunch of gas stations. When you get a bunch of people in an RV, we hopped into an RV and there's a bunch of people in there. Something seemed like maybe every 30 minutes someone had to stop to use the restroom at a different gas station. So we called it the tour to Washington, and we got to see every rest stop between Olympic National Park and the Gorge Amphitheater.
That's super awesome. I can't claim to have as much fun since our last episode. I've actually had some medical issues and was in the hospital. Fine now, but I got to be honest, I took advantage of it. I ended up chatting with all the nurses about staffing and scheduling and all that fun stuff. And it was funny because they learned what I do and they ended up like filtering into the room and we talked shop almost the entire time. It was absolutely hilarious. But obviously, you guys are joining, and if you're joining and looking at video, you're like, wait, there's another guy on here. We got Tom Tam on the call. Tom, we've been hanging out for a few years now. I think we've been chatting probably for 4 years. Welcome to Talking Shift, man. It's good to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, why don't you tell us a little about yourself? You come from Lexington. Give us a background.
I've been in Lexington about almost 11 years, and one of the responsibility is the workforce management. And since I got here, we have the UKG Kronos Workforce Central since 2009, and then we went to UKG Pro WFM in 2022. So. And since then, we have been doing a lot of cool stuff and a lot of new stuff with Pro WFM. And we have been trying to do more with the tools that we have.
I got to say, one of the things I've loved, yeah, we've met up at a lot of UKG's functions like Aspire and the summits and that stuff. What I really love is every time I've run into you know, you sit on the IT side of the house, right? But every time I see you, it's not just Tom, like he's coming and hey, I own the WFM program. I always see you with your clinical counterparts. And you guys are always collaborating together, learning together. And I've absolutely loved that, which is why we wanted to have you on this episode. Because today we really want to talk governance structure. And the key of governance structure is really that collaboration. But before we get to that, we're going to do our usual. We like to kind of ask one off the wall question to just kind of keep it light. We don't take ourselves too seriously. So here's our off the wall question for the three of us. If you had to replace your hands with some random household object, so you don't have hands, you have to replace them with something, what would you replace your hands with? So Tom, what would you replace your hands with?
I had to get the best out of both world of spoon and fork called spork.
The
Spork.
spork. Didn't that come from over at Taco Bell had the
I think so. More and more restaurants doing that now.
sporks? He's like got this multi-tool thing. All right, Josh, what's yours? If you had to replace with anything, what do you replace your hands with?
Think I'd be in survival mode. So if I had to replace them both with the exact same thing, they'd definitely be like barbecue kitchen tongs. That way I could still grab things. But if I could do one hand for each thing, then one of my hands would have to be a cup. That way, it would be really hard to drink anything if you had just garden tongs for hands. So I'd have one cup hand and one garden tong hand, and then I'd probably be good for a couple of weeks at least.
Okay, I swear we didn't plan this at all, but I would choose tongs as well.
We're Team Tong.
I was a chef in a prior life many moons ago, and tongs are like an extension of your hands and in the business. Like you can give me a cup, I can use a pair of tongs and that's fine. So I completely choose tongs as well. That's absolutely awesome. Okay, so let's dig into governance structure real quick. To me, when I think about governance structure, and I personally think it's the most important factor of success in a workforce management program. Tom, I know you sit in IT, so forgive me when I say this, but I also have given you accolades already. A lot of times when I've met with organizations, and if I know IT owns a WFM, and if I, in those conversations, I'm not sensing a large collaboration between IT and HR and operations and so on, to me, it's an immediate red flag. The technology is probably not doing what needs to be done to realize business outcomes.
Yeah, that's true.
So when I think of it, like it's the key factor. If you don't have the right people coordinating together to actually move the business forward, like we can deliver the best technology in the world, and IT can be killing it. They're maintaining it, they're delivering it, it's always up and running. But if it's not being leveraged and it's not meeting business goals, so what? And so I think there's a few key roles within the governance structure that define success or that are needed to be successful. And let's unpack this together a little bit and work our way down. I personally think there needs to be a defined workforce management owner. And when I say owner, ideally, I'm talking one person should own the technology and the WFM program. And that doesn't mean that they own all components because no one can, because it's HR, IT, operations. So no one owns every component, but they own the overall success. And even if it's not the whole program, at bare minimum, one person should own the technology, because I've definitely seen where some organizations, if I ask, hey, who owns the WFM technology? They'll make a statement like, oh, well, payroll owns this piece and IT owns this piece and operations owns scheduling. And I'm like, well, so nobody owns it. If everyone owns it, nobody owns it. And usually then there's a bunch of head nods around the table. What's your guys' thought? Do you agree, disagree? Is it a challenge to actually define a singular owner when we talk about ownership of workforce management?
For me, I feel like the ownership is d defined for me, it defines this, that someone willing to take it on and drive the usage, efficiency, and optimization. And that one owner cannot do it by himself or herself. So in my example, if you put it in this perspective, my team own the whole technology, the program, but we work closely with our nursing partner, and our nursing director actually is the co-owner with a lot of our strategies in terms of how to do scheduling, how do you utilize different rules. And I think that's what you refer to when you go to
Yeah.
conference. I have my nursing director, Kelly Carter, actually joining me in a lot of this conversation, because the more we all learn together, the better we are. So that this, I don't want this to be IT driven. It need to be business driven. So since our nursing is the biggest population in terms of users, their input is very critical to the success of adoption of technology, adoption of new processes, and actually enforcing and utilize whatever process technology that we have agreed on. Because if we do not have that driver, what ends up happening is every group wants something different. And what ends up happening is that you have a system that meets some of the need, but you cannot meet everybody's need. And the system will be so convoluted that it's impossible to maintain and manage. And one of the things that we have to learn along the way is nursing is big. They have a lot of requirements, but sometimes their requirement could conflict with the requirement that we need from scheduling and timekeeping perspective for non-nursing area. So that kind of it's a partnership where Kelly and I always have this discussion, say, okay, does it make sense? I know nursing what it is, but does it make sense as a hospital, as organization? And having that healthy discussion and conversation, that's very helpful. And having the trust that we can have an open discussion. It's not about you, it's not about me, it's about us. And then that is where the relationship and partnership become important. We also partner with payroll on timekeeping. We partner with HR on pay policy, attendance policy, because all these things come together, but it is all different stakeholders need to own piece of it, but someone needs to be in the middle, kind of glue all this team together with someone from one area, in our case, nursing. It's called like standing side by side with my team to make the things happen.
So what I'm hearing is you own a piece of it, but really you own the collaboration to make sure that you're bringing the right strategic partners to the table to look at this as a whole. Am I summarizing that correctly or understanding that
Yes,
correctly?
yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's dead on. Josh, how about you on your side at BSMH? How does that whole ownership look like on your side?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Tom that if you're owning the system, right, you need to definitely give a lot more credence to the largest single group stakeholder using that system. And that would be nursing in the healthcare capacity, right? Making sure that that partnership is the foundation or the rock of everything is great. If you envision it as like workforce management from a business perspective, what is workforce management? You boil it all down, aside from technology, aside from process, you're managing the most expensive resource within the organization, and that's your people, right? Your person throughput,
About
your human capital
50%, yeah.
management, all of that. Yeah. So when you're looking at that from that perspective, there does need to be a central authority that governs workforce management, that owns the key to the mansion, if you will. And then nursing gets the biggest room in that mansion, right? But facilitating all of those groups together, there does need to be a central owner because things like policy need to be automated by the technology. And that technology is what runs everything in the background, right? You can't be doing it all manually. So there does need to be a central group that does own it and then defines, okay, what are our roles? What are our responsibilities? How do we play well in the sandbox together and listen to one another when we're defining what our charter or our principles are then as the outputs of that governance? Yeah.
I think of the way that played out, like when I was still over at BSMH with you, Josh, of at that point I was the WFM owner, right? But to Tom's point, like I had an IT team that owned the vendor relationship, owned the integrations, and like so different people own different pieces, but the buck stopped with me. And so if the system, knock on wood, it barely ever happened, but it did once in a while, the system went down overnight, who got the phone call? Well, me, I own the system. And then I pulled in the correct people to make sure, like, I'm pulling in my IT team, my operations team, and helping coordinate, like, what do we need to do to move us to get back up and continue business in the interim? And it's one of those, if there's nobody that owns it, who's coordinating all those people in an emergency like that? So what about cross-functional steering committee? I'm going to give my thoughts as usual because, I'm not very opinionated at all. Here's my thing. I know when I speak on governance structure, and I probably asked to speak on this more than anything else, over the past 2 years, I've probably spoke on governance structure literally 100 times. Whoever owns it has to report somewhere in the hierarchy, right? Tom, you report through IT. Josh, you report through HR. I've seen it report through nursing and operations before. I've seen it report through finance. And I've had organizations and people ask me, well, what do you recommend? Like, where is it best? And my response is, I don't care. Like, because no, I don't think, to your point of having keys to the mansion, I don't think any one business line should hold all the keys to the mansion. I believe in a cross-functional steering committee that is actually leading that effort. So hierarchically, yeah, you need to report somewhere, but functionally, there should you probably had a steering committee when you're going through your implementation that was HR, IT, finance, operations, clinical operations. My call to action is don't disband that team. Like, they need to stay in place because they are going to continue to drive this organization and its workforce management operations into the future. Your workforce isn't the same today as it was 5 years ago. It's not going to be the same 5 years from today. And the technology is constantly changing. So you're going to need that engagement. Josh, I know you have that. And do they still meet on a regular basis in terms of a cross-functional input into you as the owner leading that workforce management charge, if you will?
Yeah, we're actually evolving our team to have more of a defined workforce management governance structure, which is really exciting. We had the broader HR technology division within HR, and we just own the technology, but we realized over our workforce management implementation and various automations and optimizations that we're bleeding our influence into things like policy and nursing operations and clinical workflows and run rate improvements, the attendance system, right? All of this we have our hands into. So we're splitting our team into two main groups. There's the human capital management governance, and then there's the workforce management governance. And those two are going to be functioning in leadership and then advisory capacities throughout other areas and steering committees throughout the ministry, which is really cool. At some point, though, it does feel like death by committee, to play devil's advocate, because you have a lot of committees that you then need to have representation on. And you realize very quickly that, yeah, there's tiers. It's like an onion. You're peeling away layers of this different ownership of different areas and initiatives. And when you're kind of a part of all of the workforce management, you're kind of a part of all of it. So there's a lot more optimization and improvement to be done with re regards to how agile we can operate and all of these leadership committees. So we have a long road ahead of us as well, but I think we're doing really cool things in the space to make sure that we're clearing the way for a lot of innovation to happen in healthcare technology.
Tom, at Lexington, how does that operate on your side? Obviously, you're tied in with Kelly and Pierre, but it more the executive and vision level and setting the strategic direction for workforce management. Is there cross-functional guidance that's given to you and to Kelly and to the workforce management principle as a whole, or is it something you're working towards?
We had that during the initial implementation with a cross-functional steering committee and chaired by the CNO. But after the project was done, we kind of the committee disbanded. So now it's more of Kelly and I are two person that govern the whole strategies. And Kelly have a small team of people. I have my whole team of people, and we kind of decide what to do and then how to govern. And then we get approval or go ahead from the CNO and the CIO and sometimes CHRO to make sure that what we're doing is complying with this, the policy and the strategy. I think as we start growing, I might have to work to create a more formal governance or steering committee, because as we trying to do more standardization, more automations, it's going to create a lot of friction, because automation is standardization. When we lack standardization, we're going to have a lot of issues. But when it's trying to standardize, it also means that different group of people have to change some of their processes. When you change processes on different group of people, naturally it's going to create frictions. So how do we overcome some of this friction to get us to a better place? And I think that's where I see having some sort of more structure steering committee will be helpful in driving some of those decision, more of strategy decision or more forward-looking strategy on how to do things better. And as you guys say, one of the biggest thing is when we start go down to it is people, how to schedule them and the cost associated with putting people to work, the overtime, the premium, all these other hours that people work direct translate into the cost in the salary. And we have a lot of opportunity there, and we are trying to work towards more optimization of those different strategies in terms of scheduling, pay rules, work rules, premiums. We want to do the right thing for the employee, but we also want to do it consistently across the entire healthcare system, our organizations. Because right now we have pocket of things, pocket of department doing things differently than others, and they create sometimes friction among just different department. Why this department allowed to do certain things that my department not allowed to do from the pay practice perspective?
We're going to have to eventually do an episode just on standardization because it's a whole separate conversation. Because Tom, you're hitting the nail on the head. When we talk standardization, and I think governance structure plays a heavy role in driving that standardization that's needed. And we could get into why it's needed is actually, equity for the employees across the organization. It makes you more agile to actually assume new things and all those type of things. And every organization I've talked to is trying to move towards standardization. And to your point, if we don't have buy-in at the executive level to why we need to standardize, getting the buy-in and getting the rest of the leaders on board is really going to be tough if we don't have a governance structure to support that movement. Huge item. I mean, and you're hitting the nail on the head when you're talking pay practices and things like that. As an administrator, I'm always think of, man, I want to create the most efficient system to do the job the best possible way. And when we don't have standardization, it's hard to optimize a system if my organization's doing the same thing 15 different ways. Like, how am I going to create the best in class product to actually get you there if we're all doing different things?
Well, not only that, you could also expose your organization for some legal risk because you are not being
Oh,
paid
yeah.
employee equally with the same equities, right? So they could open up for some serious challenges.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the standardization, again, that goes across the board. Yeah. I mean, legal risk is, if you got unions, geez, oh man, let's not even talk about two departments that have the same union and are interpreting the union agreement two different ways. She's, I mean, also, and we see that. We all see that. So let's dig into administrative team. Obviously, we got to have somebody that knows how to administrate the system. And I'm going to be honest right now. There's a lot of our friends out there in the organization. They're struggling. There is a shortage of strong administrators on the team. But in my take, this isn't just, I don't just want technical people. Personally, as an administrative team, I don't want them just to know how to go configure things, though I do want them to do that. I want them to read release notes. I want them to be able to know all the tools that are available to help move our organization forward and how to configure it, how to bend the system to get the most out of it. But I also personally, I want my administrative team to know my business just as well, to know workforce management principles, to learn the data and where there's cost savings and how to find cost savings in the organization. Because personally, it goes to the second point. I don't just want them working help tickets. I want them actually being internal consultants that help move my organization forward. That's the way I view an administrative team. Now, I think that jives a little bit different. Like if you're a 150,000 person organization, you probably need some people that are just hands on keyboard. But that's not most of us. Most of us actually need like more of a hybrid team that, man, they both config and they consult. Tom, well, how's your team operate? Are they just configurers or do they actually consult and work with Kelly and her team? How's that work within your world?
So I agree 100% what you say. We have a 9,000 employee organization here. So I have a technical team that do a lot of administrative work, integration work, reporting work, but also created a group called Workforce Management and System Analysts. Those are the analysts. I have three right now, and two of them actually came from operations,
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
they understand how people need to be scheduled, how to use schedules. So now we are training them, and they are getting very good at some of these features and functions. They read the release note. They trying to learn the configurations. So they kind of help what you're saying become the internal consultant to our business. When business asks for some changes, we're trying to understand what does that mean from a system perspective, and what's the impact to organization when you ask for something that sounds simple a lot of times. But when you put it in the system and apply it across the organizations, what does it mean?
Well,
Right?
what a
So
department wants and what they need, aren't always the same thing, right?
Bingo. That's why all the time they always ask for what they want is not what they need. And we always had that conversation about that kind of conversation with operation. And we have a strong relationship with nursing. So Kelly and I, our team meet every week and talk about what's going on, and we discuss. We communicate all the time to email, to phone calls, to ticketing system, and a lot of time one-off meetings to talk about strategy. What do we, when someone asks for a change to a schedule, to the configuration, to work rules, to different visibilities setup they want to do, we always ask, what does that mean? Is that what are they trying to accomplish? Instead of just giving them what they ask for, this is what happened to us when we first implemented. Our implementation partner basically built whatever we asked for. And that is where the challenge, we see a lot of challenges there. Now we're trying to get control over that, trying to get to more standardization. And then one of the things we're trying to do was you move towards standardizations, we're trying to stop the bleeding, not keep adding more to it, but keep asking the right question. What does it mean and how do we do it better? How do we make it more efficient in the configuration, in the process, in the administration of the systems and usage of the system?
Josh, I'm thinking of conversations we've had in the past. I love hearing Tom say that his analyst came from operations. I think you and I have talked at length that it's so much easier to train the technology than it is to train the business side of healthcare.
No, I agree. We're in a period of stasis right now as an organization where we've spent a long time just training the technology, just implementing. BSMH in general has been, our history is riddled with mergers and acquisitions, right? There was Bon Secours and then Mercy Health and then Roper St. Francis. We have 51 hospitals, 57,000 employees. So we've been builders for such a long period of time. It's super easy to rinse, wash, repeat, train on the technology, show people how to use it, get it rolling. But then once we've completed that journey, now switching over to a optimization mentality, like what Tom is saying, right? Like we've built it all now. Now how do we use it, right? The car is in the driveway. How do we drive it? We're talking about things like how do we reduce overtime? How do we reduce incentive spend? How do we optimize things like low census or our dependency on agency labor? And those are more open-ended questions. That's understanding and learning a lot more about the policy, and it requires a lot more governance to determine the direction and the heading that we need to be taking on that journey. So it's a different muscle that you have to work out entirely. The technology obviously enables it, but the questions that we're seeking to answer now require a lot more of a governance structure backing to make sure we're moving in that right direction.
So the last bullet on here then is really making sure we have the right partnership. So let's piggyback on what you were just talking about, Josh. Who are you partnered with as a team as you look at all these optimizations? And I'm not, some of them are technical operation optimizations, but not all of them. A lot of them, to your point, are policy and process. How are you partnered together, and who, what are the diff, let's start with who are the different teams you're partnered with to actually accomplish that?
Well, I'm not an integration specialist, right? So IT comes to mind first and foremost as the nuts and bolts holding everything together, right? And then we have nursing, like Tom had mentioned earlier. They're the biggest single group stakeholder in any hospital. And you want to make sure that nursing is capable of doing whatever you're proposing, because if you can't, then you're losing out on the biggest group of users who could champion that initiative to other groups. So those are huge, right? And then all of those other areas you mentioned earlier, Mickey, like HR, operations, finance, that includes compensation and payroll. Like all of those groups are important from a change management perspective, from a regulatory perspective. You may also want to include legal, there's policy. I mean, I
Leave
can
of
keep listing.
absence.
Yeah, FMLA, all of those people who are managing all of that absence management. I mean, there's a lot of different hats to wear here. You're going to have a big table, and you're going to have a very organized and structured governance to make sure that everybody feels heard and that everybody has a chance to actually speak their truth into that process as well when we're talking about big initiatives that impact everyone in a ministry. Like a rounding rules change. That's a huge hot topic across healthcare right now is, do we continue rounding punches the way we did? Do we pay to the minute? How do we change it if we've already set
Oh, we're
forth in
not going
one
to open that
direction?
Pandora's box on this
It's
episode. No way.
exactly. There's a lot of people who have a lot of opinions on that. So that governance is, you have to make sure that everybody is able to feel heard, but then also that you're listening to everybody in that long laundry list of people that we just listed. So it gets hairy quickly. Yeah.
Tom, how about you? Who are you partnered with? Again, you sit on the IT side. You've already highlighted your strong partnership with nursing. Who else are you and your team integrated with as we think about workforce management? And maybe what's the cadence? How often do you meet with these people to accomplish the goals that your organization has set?
It's pretty much the same all the group that Josh talked about. We involve payroll a lot of time when it comes to payrolls, timekeeping. We will involve compensation when it comes to payrolls. We'll involve our business partner when it comes to certain policy stuff, which is also trying to involve our benefits team when it comes to leave management and then nursing for sure. But and then once in a while, we have to involve our information security if we need to make some changes to how certain technology function, we make sure that we comply with our information security needs. That, as you know, one of the biggest concern in healthcare is security breaches. So we also need to partner with our IT security. So from operation perspective, we don't meet when I meet with the nursing regularly. For other group, we only put in as needed, but doesn't mean that we don't talk. Like for some of payroll is talking to my analyst a lot. I mean when every time something come up, they will talk, figure out what's happening. So we have trying to create that kind of relationship among different subgroups, feel like they can talk to us, we can try to find answer. Or when issue are beyond just one group, then we pull the other team into it, saying, okay, if we have this pay issue, why do we have this pay issue? Is because our pay policy is wrong, our work rule is wrong, what's happening behind the scene that caused this pay issues? And that's where we start had to pull in different group like compensation. Now, this other thing we are trying to work through now, our work has expanded more because we're also looking at when you have PRN doctors, is it a primary job as a PRN doctor or secondary job as a PRN doctor? And they are governed by the contract. And now we're trying to do more standardization amongst those pay for the doctors. The question is, we see the opportunity, maybe UKG can help with some of those. And when we start looking at that optimization of automations, we now have to include our folks from the physician recruiting, physician compensations, and then the people that deal with RVUs and how to pull them in and look at the whole process. And
I freaking love
all,
that.
yeah, it depends on which group we always had to work with someone because we cannot success by ourselves and we will fail by ourselves, that's for sure. So that's why we had to constantly working, reaching out to different group, pulling together. And then we also sometimes forget that, okay, if I make this change to these pay rules, does it have any implication to other population that might not be involved in this the APP, right? It's not doctors, they're governed by certain things by HR and also certain things by the physician compensation. How does it cross over? So we're trying to get all the stakeholders behind the scene and start having discussions.
I love the way you're unpacking this whole idea of your team just doesn't administrate the system. We're almost a matchmaker. Like we're looking into, hey, here's the problem. Who's everyone that needs to influence it? I was on a podcast earlier this week with Dr. Sarah Inman at Improv, Workforce on Deck. I do recommend it. We're doing some stuff and she's going to come on Talking Shift too. But at the end of the podcast, one of the questions asked me is like, what's one of the big takeaways? And my answer was, you got to get a sledgehammer and break all the silos that exist in your organization. Because if you have silos, you're not going to get stuff done. And Tom, that's exactly what you're highlighting right now is there's a problem. Two of us aren't going to fix it sitting at the table. We need to bust the silos and start coordinating together. And that's awesome. As a side question, it related to governance, but it may be a little bit more in the weeds. Tom, who has access into your Pro WFM system, UKG system, to make configuration changes? Is it just your team, or are there other teams that have that ability to make changes in the system?
Just my team.
Just your team.
Yes.
And Josh, for you, it's just your team with your IT partners with some small responsibilities on that side. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's just my team of six and three other IT partners. That's it.
And I'm going to give accolades, because I think that's the right way to go. Is when you have too many hands in the cookie jar, like if you have an IT team doing this and another team is doing advanced scheduling configuration and payroll's doing all the work rule builds, when you have that many hands in the cookie jar, the assimilation and the coordination needed that all these things work together efficiently becomes really difficult. So it just affirms why we have smart people on the call, or at least agree with me in this front. But I would challenge those listeners that you have multiple departments making edits. Like, I think from a governance structure, my call to action would be try to consolidate. You might be pulling people from payroll, pulling people, and trying to actually consolidate that so that you can. I don't like to use the word control, because the purpose isn't control. The purpose is really to make sure everyone's rowing in the same direction, which is hard to do when everyone has different agendas.
It's true. Mickey, I think one thing that's critical today is that when we start looking at the entire system, sometimes solutions require multi-layer of changes. You could be changing the booming, you could be changing the CRT table, you could be changing some of the function access profile setup, some of them could be changing the work rules, payroll schedules, because you have to look at the whole in totality, see what makes sense, how to accomplish this with the most efficient way, and then least destructive to the whole organizations. And sometimes if you start silo those, and this way you can step on each other's, and it's a painful process trying to untangle that.
Josh, I think we ran an instance even when we were on the same team, we still did that once in a while.
Hey, you and I single-handedly have brought down multiple tenants just on our own accord, just the
Wait,
two of
wait.
us.
We were rather young in our career of workforce management at that point. So let's cut ourselves off. Right. But
Hey,
let's be
you got to
honest,
learn.
that's how you learn the lessons, right? You make a mistake like that once.
Yeah, then you realize very quickly why these governance structures are in place is because of people like us.
Tom, when we think of lessons learned, as you've developed and your governance structures evolved, and you've covered even a little bit of this, what would you say, what have been lessons learned and maybe your biggest challenges, and maybe past challenges, but maybe what's a challenge you're experiencing today? Like, because let's be honest, we all learn from the mistake. So how can our listeners learn from some of the challenges you've had when it comes to governance structure?
I think governance, one of the things I just want to see is that always think more than what you're asked to do at a moment in time, because a lot of time we so focus on trying to make fixes to the different scheduling template, different scheduling zone or shift shed, all these things about scheduling. And sometimes we might forget about what is the impact to the time card. And then if we understand the time card, but then question is, the payroll know about this, right? So governance is to make sure that you have all the stakeholders in there, and then followed by communication, because I feel like we're trying to communicate. Communication is like nonstop, like change management. You always had to communicate and try to let them know. As you know, I think you talk about change management in one of your episode now, is that it never stops. You can put out 10 email and people still miss the email, and you still have to reach out to them and still to say, hey, do you know about this? What can we do to make this thing better? Especially for those key stakeholders that is really impactful to them if we make the change. Like a lot of time we made some changes that were impactful to the nursing team. We're trying to communicate with nursing team to email, but I know learning from the past, email is not going to do the job. It requires a lot more in-person or hands-on communication, or face-to-face communication, phone calls, or WebEx. to get some message across.
About you, Josh, biggest lesson learned or things maybe you are learning now or challenges when it comes to the governance structure. Although Tom hit it the nail on the head. We should have had him on for the change management episode. He pretty much summarized the whole episode in like 10 seconds.
He did. That could have been a really short podcast. Yeah, I've been saying there's four C's to governance, right? Good governance structures are good at three of them, typically, not the fourth one. The first one is improving clarity, right? Establishing that direction. That's a given. Usually, when you have a governance structure, right, you have projects and outputs, and people know what those are, right? The second is consistency. Typically, you have a pretty regular approval process or evaluation process there. The third one is facilitating collaboration, right? A governance structure breaks down those silos and brings people in. But the fourth one, that one is continuous improvement. Like what Tom said, that's the hard one. Typically, people don't give enough space within their portfolio or the oversight of that governance structure. They don't give enough space to evaluate what that was, an after action project summary, for example. How do we do it better the next time, right? So like things like, were we under budget? Were we on time, right? Were we late? How does that impact our project planning in the future to identify how long things are going to take, how many resources it's going to take? Looking at what was not successful, looking at who wasn't involved from the start, who probably should have been, right? The stakeholders, like Tom was saying, like, how do we get these people involved earlier the next time so we're not chasing our tail halfway through the project, bringing people up to speed? All of that continuous improvement, people don't give enough credence to that. We're always short-sighted and going straight into the next thing because we have a lot of competing responsibilities. Just like what Tom said with change management, right? That evaluation component is really important for your governance because continuous improvement is one of those foundational components of why you're governing these systems to begin with. So if you're not evaluating after the fact for each one of your projects, then you're missing out on half of what this governance structure is supposed to be accomplishing. And too often we don't have time for it. I am guilty of that. We're all guilty of that in our own right. We need to be better.
Just, I love it. You have the 4C, make it a 6P. That's good.
I don't know. We came up with these alliterations, but they work. So if people remember them, game on. What role would you say governance structure has in measuring success? And I don't know about you guys, but in my talks throughout the organizations that I work with, I think measuring success is something we're still trying to wrap our head around it. I don't think we've really solidified that. How does governance structure and the people at play a role in actually measuring, are we succeeding in the goals that we have?
There's two main things that you're touching on there. The first is what worked and what didn't, right? Where you need to identify what failed and how to prevent it from failing the next time, which is really important. What I tend to focus on the most is what did we fail on and how can we avoid that in the future? The second piece of measuring success is something that I need to be better at personally, and that's projecting our success throughout the organization, sharing what we have done well, right? How much money did this initiative save? Or what manual process was automated out? How
It's a
much
big
more
one.
efficient is this process? Like, what have we been successful at taking that and then being that creative storyteller, sharing that with our leadership, sharing that within the organization, making sure that people know about tools and resources that we are building for them, like actually projecting that success. That's something that's often overlooked as well. And I think we all need to be better at that too.
That is absolutely huge because if we go back to that change management discussion, I think one of the reasons we struggle with change management, people don't even know where we've been successful. So when the next new thing comes, they don't understand the impact we've already made by the last thing we did or the thing before that. That is huge. I really love that. How about you, Tom? What's your thought in terms of the governance role within measuring success?
I think one of the things that you mentioned about steering committee and the governance is that if we have a clear defined goal, and a lot of time we just say we need to solve a problem, and we just try to solve a problem, and the problem solved, we move on. We never come back and say, hey, like Joe was saying, promote the success. And then sometimes you have to know what you're trying to accomplish so that you can do measurement before and after. And a lot of times, oh yeah, we did it great. Now we do the measurement. You did after, but you did not know what happened before that, right? So those are some of the hard evidence you can present. But there's another soft success that had to be is hard to manage. That is, or hard to measure. That is, how easy is somebody doing things with the tools that we give it to them, and that the feeling of person doing the job. Are we making the job easier? And sometimes we can say, oh, how many hours you spend? That's great. But this combination, like for example, how easier to schedule people to work? That is just one dimension. But then the question is, how do I schedule people to work without costing a lot of overtime? That is a second dimension that sometimes is like multi-layer. It's all become work and emotion involved in here. And the people that are doing using the tools, if they feel like that we help their life become better, they will help promote. Yeah, this tool made my life so easy. But you're trying to articulate it. There are so many different components to it that it's hard to measure one by one. They become emotional and more perception-based success.
Yeah, I think you guys are hitting the nail on the head. I'll add an additional component. When I think of things like overtime, incentive spend, like these type of things that we know it's why you do workforce management. Part of it is controlling spend, right? We've talked about it. It's patient care, employee engagement, and financial outcomes. And financial outcomes are the easiest to measure of those, right? The trouble sometimes is we create these tools like, hey, Tom, you and I were talking before the episode of you're doing some stuff to control overtime. We can create the tools in an admin team to help track overtime, but if our governance structure doesn't drive accountability towards that, I can give you tools till I'm blue in the face. If there's no accountability to holding leaders accountable to that, and change management and training and support and all those other things, because it's not just about, beating it over their head. It's about we're all rowing in the same direction. But if the governance structure doesn't support those outcomes and how we're going to respond when we're not realizing those outcomes, we're not going to see the changes that we wish we would see in our organization. And it's not because we don't have the tools. We don't have the governance structure and the processes and sometimes the policies in place to actually support the tools that we've provided. So let's end on one last idea. So we have a lot of people out there that when they're listening to this, they're taking notes and they're thinking, man, I have portions of this. I don't have all of this. Like there's pieces of my governance structure that are missing. And some may even be thinking, man, I'm not sure I have any governance structure, or like we just kind of have been flying by the seat of our pants. Which I get it. Like there is no harm, no foul. We all have different starting points. So I'm going to pose it to each of you. If you were starting from scratch, like, hey, brand new implementation, you really haven't had anything in the past. What is one piece of advice you would give to an organization that is looking to reestablish a governance structure? Tom, I'm going to start with you.
I would say start with all the major stakeholder and make sure that what is the purpose of implementing the tools. If the organization say I want to implement UKG workforce management, question is who are the stakeholders? Are we having a commitment from a leadership level to do this? And those stakeholders have to be committed and then create a steering committee. And ideally, that steering committee will be a permanent steering committee instead of temporary steering committee. Because then you have a strong leader in the middle trying to drive this. Steering committee can give you direction, but the execution is the most important. You can have a clear direction you want to go to, but you fail in execution, you're not going to accomplish much at all. But and then it's multi-layer. Then you can drive those accountability down to the different team, to the user, to the management team, saying, this is why we use these tools, how are we going to use it? How can it make our life easy? How we can improve our bottom line, improve our spend? Then there will be a strong start to get a foundation in to make sure you have the support you need to implement the software.
So your biggest takeaway, your biggest recommendation is we got to have the right people at the top aligned on vision and that felt actually filters down to the rest of the organization. Am I reiterating that appropriately?
That's right.
Josh, how about you?
Tom hit the nail on the head, honestly. I mean, at macro scale, right? You have to start with your executive sponsors for a governance structure. Because if you're at a large organization like Tom's or like mine or like yours, Mickey, you have to start with an executive sponsor and work your way down. You have to align on that vision. But on the micro scale, you can have your own governance in your own department. Like if you are a payroll manager listening to this podcast thinking, hey, how can I improve the efficiency in my own department? All of this applies on a micro scale within a singular department as well, right? You need to align on what your principles are, what your charter is, and what your mission statement is. And then things like project intake become a lot easier. Like, do they align with our principles? Do they align with our charter? Do they align with our mission statement? If not, we're able to clear a lot of those weeds right off the bat. And that happens on a macro scale for a whole organization. That also happens on a micro scale within an individual department as well. So all of this is scalable. It's like a Russian nesting doll, if you will. You can apply it on multiple different scaled levels. So you have to align on the very core principles, though, to start with anything. And for us, right, if that's something like, hey, we want to improve our organization's posture as an employer of choice, we want people to want to come to work here. Perfect. That's our principle. Now, everything that we're going to be doing is going to be focusing with that as the lens, right? And if something comes up and it's a shiny new technology or a shiny new red button that we can push, but it doesn't improve our organization's posture as an employer of choice, we are now moving it to the side, right? We're clearing it away. So it's important that we have those principles locked down first before anything else.
Oh, look at you calling out the six pillars. I'm going to piggyback. I love how you brought it. It works in the microcosm too. And I'm going to call out, if you, let's say that you're listening to this podcast and yeah, you're sitting in, you're an administrator for the system. You're not even the boss. You're the administrator, or you're sitting in payroll, or you're sitting in nursing and you're thinking, man, we are siloed. And you're thinking to yourself, man, I can't drive change because I don't sit in a position of power. I am going to call your bluff on that. I think we all sit in a position of influence, and you can be that change agent that actually is breaking the silos. So if you're sitting in payroll and you're like, man, we never talk to these teams, be the one that starts it. Be the one that starts that evolution. Sometimes it takes time. It takes time to actually break through the cultural layers that have existed in your organization for a while. I personally got to be honest, I called myself a bulldog in my organizations. Like, I'm not going to accept the status quo, and you might not always like me because, but I'm going to push forward to do what's right. And I guess that'd be my call to action. Even if it doesn't exist and you're not in power, you can still be known as the collaborator who's pulling the right people together to move your organization forward, and be that agent of change. I think that was a great call out. So, team, I'll add, any final thoughts? Big ideas that we didn't talk about in terms of governance structure. Final thoughts from you, Tom.
My suggestion is that there's no one size fits all. You look at what your organization culture look like, your internal politics look like. But I'll strongly encourage that talk to other peers because you are not doing this alone. You have a
Oh,
lot of
yeah.
other peers in the healthcare industry that were willing to share information and get input. Reach out, talk to a few different people, and then figure out what best for you in terms of your structure. But you need a governance structure.
Yeah, man. Come call what any of us, like Tom, Josh, me, we'll talk to you about it. And if those that are listening, there's a healthcare user community that we are all part of that meets once a month. That's another place to just learn and feel like, man, how are other organizations do it? Join this thing and start to network with other people. That type of thing. I'd agree with that. Josh, any final thoughts?
The first best time to start a governance structure is before any of the project work starts. The second best time to start a governance structure is now. So that's it, really, in a nutshell.
I'm going to piggyback off of that one. Just if you're someone that's going through implementation, I think it's the perfect time to forward think into what you want your governance structure to be and use your project as an opportunity to start aligning the people that way, including your administrative team. Like, if you have an administrative team that, man, this person's just head down, they like to do things the way they've always done, probably not a leader in a future governance model. Because as we've talked about, we want people that are forward thinking and collaborating and not just doing what a customer asks, but giving them what they need to accomplish business goals. And so I think during a project's a good time to do that. But Josh, I think your point is very well taken. If you're well past that point, which most of us are at this point, it's never too late. So Tom, I want to thank you for joining us. Absolutely awesome having this conversation with you. And to everyone else, we look forward to talking shift with you later on. Have a great day, all.